You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to Over the Line with myself, George McDonough, joined by my panel guests. In a couple of moments, I will introduce you to Mike Rafferty, to Páirc Cunningham, and a new voice to Galway Bay FM Sport, who will be joining us also every Saturday to talk about Formula One racing and other things. So he's going to have to move fast. And that is Dara Canning. Dara, you're very welcome to the studio. And Formula One.
Yeah. For a Roscommon man, it's not the first thing you'd point to.
I like the way you get in the Roscommon.
Of course, I have to. I'm outnumbered and we're both in a relegation battle now. So I'll just have to fight my corner this evening. Yeah, Formula One all came from the Netflix series, I suppose. Lockdown, nothing else to be doing. Watched the whole thing, got really into it. Suffered an injury, got laid up for a couple of months. It was an Achilles, snapped it again. So I had 6 months off my feet and plenty of time. And started building out an app and launched it last year. And we've launched a second season this year. So built an app called P1 Predict, where people can predict their Formula One qualifying and race predictions. And it's been going great so far. So that's a very high level overview of the app.
Well, we'll talk more about that in a little bit later on, about Formula One racing. In the coming weeks, we'll talk about Roscommon as well. And we'll talk about Galway footballers, lads. And I suppose we'll start with the double header that we had in Pier Stadium on Saturday last. I suppose we were expecting the footballers to be beaten, I think. We felt all the time, Páirc, that going into the last series of games, we were going to be in trouble if we were going to home to Dublin, away to Kerry, the two best teams in the country from last season, needing results. Now, we'll be lucky things have went well outside of that, but I thought we were well second best on Saturday.
Yeah, they were a lot of they probably were second best at most stages of the game against Dublin the last day. You could see even just from watching Dublin, just the sheer class of them and their movement. The forward players there, like Colin Cannon, they put on a masterclass. It is worrying signs, I suppose, for Galway, but at the same time, it's kind of nearly a dead rubber game down in Kerry with Roscommon having to go all the way up to Derry to beat Derry as well. So it's a good situation they're in, but with the amount of injuries and bodies that are missing, it's a bit of a worry.
It is, and I found Mike Rafferty very strange. Well, I don't mean strange in the strangeness of things, that Páirc was unable to give any update afterwards when we'd see two frontlinemen, Damien Comer and Shane Walsh. It looks like that they're very long term, and it looks to me, listening to him and looking at him on TV, that he's type of resigned to not having them, at least for the game in London and maybe a bit further into the championship.
Yes. Look, injuries you just don't know with them. And I mean, obviously, it's not just the two boys, but I mean, if you have, I think Matthew Tierney and Killian McDade have been equally crucial to, you know, Galway's performances in recent times. I think sometimes managers are reluctant to give out what exactly details are. Look, London, I know the odd team has got a fright when they've gone to London to play a championship game, but I certainly don't think there's any mention of it. Now, I did hear, I think it was Jonathan on Saturday, talking about the championship and talking about, I've actually forgotten what the way the draw has gone, but anyway, he mentioned sort of Roscommon, and he took London, beating London for granted, mentioned Roscommon and mentioned Mayo. And they forgot about sort of some other Yates County that obviously aren't going to pose much of a challenge to the goal. Look, obviously injuries are a problem. I mean, a lot of lads are getting an opportunity, you know, to play in attack. I mean, the likes of, you know, Killian O'Curran and, you know, Cathal Sweeney, you know, and I think these are good tests. The game on Saturday, I saw some of it, didn't see it all, in and out. And from what I was told by two people who were at it, that Dublin just were sort of performed. They never stepped out of first gear. That's what I was described as.
We'll go back to that, what you're saying there, and it's great to see players coming through, but unfortunately in Division 1, lads, you don't get that opportunity to blood that many players, because two defeats in a row and all of a sudden you're into a relegation battle. Dara.
Yeah, and we can see it with Roscommon. Last year did really well at the start of the league. This year, it's not able to make it click. And I suppose everybody in Roscommon always has a bit of faith that when a new manager comes in, there'll be new systems. And last year, we kind of waited it out. And it looked like they were starting to play a game where... I went to the match in Pierce Stadium last year against Galway for the league. And they played well. They played, like, managed their energy well. And we felt like that might be the game that they'll play going forward. But that didn't work out that well then in the Championship. So Roscommon, I think, unfortunately, are going to have a massive task to stay up this year. They obviously going up to Derry. I don't think it's going to work out. Derry have been in great form. But yeah, it's a very, very thin line. But it's where Roscommon need to be, no more than Galway, in Division 1 to be able to push forward in the Championship.
And is that, how would I say, necessity to be in Division 1? And we see now that Kildare ain't going to be involved in the Sam McGuire Cup this year, you know, and there's all sorts of consolations. And you wonder, all their great protests, Newbridge or nowhere, what have they taken their eye off the ball? But it's the necessity to be in Division 1. And if you're not starting in a good level, you're nearly playing your Championship team, if you can, in the latter stage of the league to ensure your Division 1 status. And you're not really finding those players, are you, Paul?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest problem for Galway, I think, in terms of you need to have your group of players training, playing together, working together every week, basically now coming towards the latter stages of the league. And that's been a big problem for Galway. It's like even you seen there the last day Sean Kelly was down to start, picks up a knock, out for now for 2 or 3 weeks. Another massive loss to the Galway setup, the leader he is. And players there like Killy McDade hasn't been seen this year. Matthew Tierney, he's picked up a quad injury. They've just getting injuries and niggles coming. And it's difficult for Galway at the moment. And the regaining this Division 1 status, yes, it has its pros and cons, I suppose, of both sides of it. And I think last year didn't Dublin were down in Division 2 and they ended up being All-Ireland champions. So it's not really much of a thing to look into. Like I don't know, but there is pros and cons of everything. But my biggest worry is just the players aren't on the training pitch playing together, getting minutes together, building even bonds around the pitch.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. But from the game the last day, and it was, in a way, I thought, I won't say like a game of chess, but it was like a game that you were watching highlights of, in the sense that every time Dublin became in a bit of trouble, they were able to up the 2 or 3 of the scores in the second half were fantastic scores. But it's their ability, and it's what I suppose separates them, and to a lesser extent Kerry, from other counties. The amount of players that are so comfortable on the ball, they're not all the time looking to get it to a certain scoring forward. They're actually getting it to just into the position. Guys are going into the position. They're making these runs off the ball because they're all of this confidence. They're able to take a score.
Yeah, that was a big thing on show in Pierce Stadium, definitely on Saturday. In terms of Dublin, they were just getting in around the back, creating point scoring chances and taking them. And then you had obviously Matt Conor Canlon probably did most of the scoring, but like Brian Howard was stepping forward, getting scores. Niall Scully got a few scores. They just, every single one of them just looked so comfortable on the ball.
But on the day, like when Galway scored, I think it was 9 points from play. You know, yeah. Which I think, you know, is maybe better than some recent times. I know Killian O'Curran scored 5 frees as well. But I think probably go with, and I know we talked about the players that's missing, but I think that all the players who are playing in that Galway forward line, a couple of younger lads, I would say O'Curran is relatively new. But you know, they're around a long time. They have played. But I think Galway still have, they've scored a point less. Sorry, Roscommon have scored a point less than them in the overall scoring in the first sort of, in all the games that's played. You know, taking goals and points together. Roscommon has scored 80 points, we'll say. Galway has scored 81. And, you know, it isn't a huge contribution. And I was looking at some of the other games, as we call it, on the Sunday game last night. I think it was Westmeath and Down. Right now, there was a bit of a dour first half. It's only 7 points scoring it. But in the second half, I mean, both teams knocked over some cracking scores. And I'd say, Paddy, you know, you were at the recent Galway games and probably have seen them. So I'm not sure. I haven't seen them all, so I haven't seen how much shooting they're doing, right? But a lot of guys now, I mean, literally, unless they're in front of the post, whether they won't shoot or they're not allowed to shoot. You know, there's a book on that somewhere. But that game in Mullingar yesterday between, as I said, Down and Westmeath was a cracking example of lads just going out. Both of them, I think, had qualified for the group.
Yeah.
It was whichever of them would end up on top. It doesn't make any difference anyway. It ended in a draw. But the shooting from long range was just fantastic to see. I think that's something that's missing in somewhat to a certain extent maybe from Galway football as well.
I think it's more than Galway football in a way, lads, because if you go back to the Galway-Tyrone match, the referee rightly blew the whistle up later on when in actual fact Tyrone were trying to just to get the ball onto their shooter. You know, and it is, I just think there's too much emphasis with some counties of getting the ball to certain people, but this is what I suppose puts Dublin and Kerry that bit ahead of everybody else.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, the Canavans for particular would be particular Tyrone guys that you'd want to. But I mean, Dublin, I think they have so many guys that are just, you know, these lads are around a long time. I mean, but they keep just introducing one or two, you know, just gradual new names that are coming into it. And that's what sort of keeps them taking over. I'm sure it's just, if you take it Roscommon, you know, maybe that's sort of Mayo. They keep introducing players as well, but it just takes a bit longer, and Dublin have the confidence. They've been there for so long.
Yeah, I just don't think, I wouldn't be too confident, Dara, as it was common about going to Derry, that they seem to put most of their eggs in the basket that they're going to try and win the league. So It looks as if that's going to happen. But again, Galway have to go to Kerry and they have to show up as well, and it's going to be tough because you have Championship in just a couple of weeks afterwards. Hurling wise, lads, a draw against Limerick. Limerick unjustly down to 14 men because I don't know why he was sent off. But he was sent off for sort of pulling at John and Anne's helmet, I would think. But a bit of petty refereeing. But I don't think Limerick were out of second gear, were they?
Well, Limerick, I mean, obviously, more than the Dubs in football, you know. They're a cracking side physically, but what also is, and we're talking there about new players coming through. I mean, your man English who played yesterday, right? He's a relatively new player, Darry English. I think. I mean, he got 5 points from play, right? Now, I mean, maybe as somebody who mightn't follow the game, who follows the game without knowing all these new players. But Limerick keep producing players, and I think, you know, come all Ireland time, I think they're going to be the team, more than the Dubs in football, they're going to be the team to knock over.
And they played for, was it 50 minutes with 14 men, and still get a draw away from home. So they're.
But I still don't think they were ever pressing anything near a panic, but it's ominous, really, for everybody else, I think. That's just, it's a machine down there now.
It's insane. I couldn't get over. Like you see them on the television and It's like this, but you actually see them in the flesh. They're absolute power of men. So there, like they were, Carroll Jaggerty stepped onto the pitch there in the second half. But he's built like a unit. Like it was absolutely mental. I couldn't believe it. I agree with you. I'm 100% sure. Limerick looked like they weren't even showing a tiny bit of their hand at all. Going through the motions, they were getting their scores a lot more easier.
Yes.
With 14 men, then Galway were getting their scores.
We had to work for every score, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and I just wonder, and people are putting a lot of pressure on Shefflin that he has to deliver at least a Leinster title. I mean, our own commentary team of Niall and Cyril on Saturday adhere to that a couple of times. Like, you know, we need to win a Leinster title. We need to make some progress. But the folly, I think, of this, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful to anybody, but we've been talking over the last 3-4 weeks about Johnny Glynn coming back into the squad. With due respect to Johnny, he has made a life for himself in New York. He is obviously working and married in New York, and it's a huge commitment they're looking for him. Like, and Johnny is not getting any younger. We haven't seen county action, I think, for 3 years. Are we just clutching at straws? Is it a case that the players are not there, or we just start producing them into the squad?
Well, is it a case? I wouldn't have the inside knowledge on it, so I wouldn't know for certain. But I mean, obviously, have Galway come knocking on Johnny Glynn's door and said, Johnny, can you come home? We need you. Or is Johnny Glynn coming home trying to make the panel, right? Now, as I said, I wouldn't have inside knowledge on it, so I don't know the answer to that. But I mean, obviously, there's a lot of lads there. But it was exactly my viewing of the game was exactly what Pádraig has said. Anything that Limerick did just looked to come so easy, where Galway just had to work so hard for everything that they got. And that was just a, sort of the difference.
And obviously, like, when you look back on the day, it was the day that was billed as the All-Ireland Champions come to town. But irrespective of whether you watched on TV, watched there in the flesh, the message was the same, that both All-Ireland Champions were a good deal ahead of us at the moment and were doing things just that bit easier. And it's, I suppose, that's the benchmark that we have to be judged on. And am I right in saying that maybe thinking of success in All-Ireland for both hurling and football is pie in the sky this year?
Yeah, you would think it is. Realistically now, looking at it at the moment, you'd say yes. But then terms again, like, I do think there is something in this football team that, like, there is it. They just need to get the gel of players back playing together, playing with each other, and the run like they went on the year they got to the All-Ireland final against Kerry, and they just didn't have lads picking up injuries, knocks, nothing like that, and that's the real key for the footballers. I feel now that the hurlers, I think it does look like a bit too far, and Niall and Cyril were saying that the Leinster title is the big one they're looking for this year.
But you know, last year Limerick had to win their last game in Munster to get out of Munster, right? So, strange, the Munster Championship is probably more competitive than any All-Ireland. I don't think Kilkenny are performing at the level that they were. You know, Wexford are sort of no great shakes. I mean, you know, there is the potential, certainly, for at least, as you call it, a Leinster title for Galway. But the Munster title, whether you're playing Tipperary or Clare or whoever, that's the battle that Limerick, and they have to peak, whereas, I mean, other teams mightn't. In Dublin, if you take football in the Leinster Championship, Dubs don't have to peak too early. Limerick have to be ready for the Munster Championship.
Maybe the biggest danger to Limerick is indeed the Munster Championship itself. Come back after this break, we'll move on.
Over the Line, in association with Supermax, celebrating three decades of passion, dedication and unforgettable moments on and off the field. Supermax, proud sponsors of Galway GAA for over 30 years. You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to part two on our panel discussion and Over the Line with myself, George McDonagh, Mike Rafferty, Pádraig Cunningham and Dara Canning. As we look back at the weekend action, 086-3833-553 is the number if you'd like to get in touch with us. As we look back again at the weekend, we move now maybe to rugby, lads. And Ireland are Six Nations champions. And this is a discussion I've had here many a time in the past. Lads, we won the Six Nations, but we can't deliver when it matters most in the World Cup. And I think already there's a bit, for me, there's a few signs of after the Lord Mayor's horse with the current campaign. But we won the Six Nations Championship. It's all we could do. We fell over the line against Scotland, but we didn't win a Grand Slam. England were up for it last week. I'm opening up to you. Do you think, lads, that the Six Nations maybe now is becoming a secondary competition in world rugby compared to the World Cup?
Not necessarily. I mean, the Six Nations is a competition that stands in its own right. I mean, yes. whether no matter what sport you participate in, you can only win whatever competition you play in, right? And I'm not a fan of, you know, those people. I'm not sure whether you're alluding to the fact or not, is that, you know, Ireland got, cannot just get past the quarterfinal stage. Okay, there have been times in the past where they should have done better, all right? But, you know, this year, the World Cup, they won all their group games, including beating the world champion South Africa, right? Okay, they got beaten by New Zealand in a cracking game, right, for maybe the purists who would know the inside out of rugby, which I have to admit, I wouldn't, right? You know, they were finding fault slightly with the Irish game. But, you know, but they were only a score away from winning that contest and the potential. Look, France were at home in that World Cup. Again, their world was depending on that. They flopped, okay? They didn't perform either in this Six Nations. They just got over the line against England the last time. So look, Ireland have won the Six Nations. Okay, they started the competition better than they finished. They weren't impressive maybe against England, or again, they got over the line against England. But look, they scored more tries than anybody else. They scored more points than anybody else. They conceded less than everybody else. So, George, I know you can knock, and I know how the one is looking for perfection in every sphere, but look, Ireland won the competition. They were the better team. And, you know, I think the World Cup is history. It's gone. We didn't qualify, but we've won whatever we can win. That's my philosophy on it.
Gentlemen.
We're also looking at the post-Johnny Sexton era too. So, I mean, maybe it says more about us as fans that we... It almost feels anticlimactic. They won the Six Nations. That's 2 years in a row. I know it's not a Grand Slam, and I think everybody maybe fell asleep at the wheel a little bit and thinking we'd just walk it past England, and England showed up. Right, yeah. And England showed up against France as well. They started slow and picked up, and I feel like we started strong and maybe faded off towards the end. And I don't know if it's an issue that's coming up now where we've lacking depth. You know, we don't have Mac Hansen out in the wing for this one. We didn't have Hugo Keenan for the last game. And there were areas out in the wing, I felt defensively they may not have been the strongest. I felt there was a few, not so much against Scotland, but in the English match especially, I felt like the wings were targeted and... You know, the English got a return from that. But I feel like it was a great start to the post-Johnny Sexton era. I think there hasn't been, if you think about it, nobody's been questioning the decision for Crowley at number 10.
Nobody's talking about it. But there was a lot of debate. I agree, Darragh, there was an awful lot of debate, lads. And those fellas being put up as successors. And in fairness to Crowley, it's a poison... It was technically a poison chalice he was jumping into, because he was going to be judged on Johnny Sexton's talent. But apart from one or two wobbles from the place ball, he answered most calls.
He did, John. I 100% agree with there, Darragh. This is post-Johnny Sexton, so like it's a really tough position he's going into. He's been judged so much basically on everything Johnny Sexton done. And every, like, you look back at it, like, I was there the day to play in New Zealand in Paris, and every call went through Johnny Sexton. Like, everything goes through him. So, like, now you look at it and it's so much weight and pressure put on Crowley. But to be fair, as you said, he's kicking probably one or two kicks there against...
But again, I'm measuring him against
Johnny Sexton.
That's the
side of it. Like, so, yeah, I do agree with Mike saying as well. It's Six Nations. It's like, it's there to be won. We had to go and win it, and they have done it. And... like, the Scotland game was a game, it was always going to be nerve-wracking for them. They were in a position, they knew they had to win, and they were completely heavy favourites against them, and then just had to win the game. And it was, they just didn't get over the line until the end, towards the end.
And you take Carberry, out half, right?
Crowley.
Like, you had Carberry, Crowley and Healy. You know, three players who were...
Burdens.
Yes, all have potential in Munster right now. You know... Well, yeah. Your man has gone off to Scotland. Carberry is moving on. And, you know, Crowley has come through. So he came through a tough school in Munster to get where he did. Now, I know you mightn't totally agree with that, but oh, I mean, when you have opposition, when you have, you know, three other players vying for the same place, you know, that's competition in its own right. But as Darragh said, it's a perfect valid point. Post Johnny Sexton, you know, Ireland could have fallen a bit flat. But that team, I think, is too experienced. Like, Farrell is a good boss. Too many Leinster players there to keep it together. They play together every week. So
And in a way, down in Munster, they were recovering from the Ronan O'Gara, the end of the Ronan O'Gara era. They haven't really 100% replaced O'Gara, maybe until now. I was a fan of Healy. I think he got a short shift, but others will say no. But another thing I'm going to go to you lads about the Irish rugby team, and I do think the lack of vision behind the scenes, it's the appointment of Peter O'Mahony as captain. If we're going to build, and I am of the believer that we are now judged on your World Cups. I mean, Farrell came out and said, we're now going to have a go at the world champions in their own backyard. Great, the Springboks. But I don't think O'Mahony is going to go to South Africa. I don't think he's going to go on tour. It looked, for all intents and purposes, that was the end of an era for him on Saturday. Why then appoint him as a captain if you know that in 7 months' time after appointing him, you're going to be having to go through the same procedure again?
But there's plenty of other players, well, I won't say plenty, but there's other players there with experience of captaincy, right? And I think you were, Sexton was going, so he was the leader by far, right? And I think O'Mahony certainly carries the same high esteem that Sexton did as well, right? And I think there was a little bit of a continuation there. Now, I know that when he wasn't there, as Doris became captain in the past, Ryan now, who's actually out, he had surgery. He's going to be out for some time. The centre there as well.
Ringrose,
yes. Yeah. You know, he has been touted as a captain. But I think it's going to be one of the forwards. I think it, whether it's Doris or Ryan, that'll ascend to the captaincy. But I don't think, you know, you were talking there about the World Cup. You know, we're 3 years away from a World Cup. I mean, whether these guys survive injury, you know, I think it's... You don't need to plan it, don't think, that far ahead for a captain for that far down the road.
I suppose it's just throwing this out there. Could have been a sentiment thing. They know he's gonna finish. He wasn't too sure if he'd come back after the World Cup. Maybe there's been discussions to say, lead us to the Six Nations. He gets his captain's, and I think he deserves to be good.
There's no doubt he deserves
it. And I think that was his only shot that he'd get it. And I think maybe the plan is already in place in the background to have him.
So you're saying what one or two scribes have thrown out in the sense, Dara, that Farrell knew, right, I have a chance here. Make O'Mahony the captain, knowing that I technically have now a full season to find my captain to bring me forward down the line, is it?
I think so. Yeah.
I just think, you know, I'm all for it. I think Peter O'Mahony's been a great servant, but when one looks at the broader picture, I think.
Who would you have appointed, George?
Who would I have appointed? I'd have appointed a man from Ballinair, Caelan Doris.
Right.
Number 8 forward. Mm-hmm. Any player in the back row, I just think he would be the ideal man. That's just my thinking.
Yeah. Well, he was captain for two of those games. So, I mean, obviously, yeah.
I think so. But look, only time will tell, and we look forward to what's going to happen down the line with Peter O'Mahony and the remainder of the squad. It's this, you know, like we talk about Mac Hansen there, Connacht represented by Finlay Beelam and Bundy Aki in the squad, and it looks like there's not many more putting up their hands for selection. From a Connacht perspective, Prendergast got off the boil slightly maybe this season. I don't know.
The back row is very competitive.
It's ultra competitive, but Aki was certainly superb. No, the only problem is he's 34 coming, but he was absolutely fantastic in the last 10 months. Beelan done well. I'm not a fan of the wrinklets in the hair by playing in the front row, but that'll be just me. It does look the Tadhg Furlong could be coming to the end of his tether because he got a bang in the shoulder again before he came off on Saturday, and he is beginning to pick up these niggly injuries that come with a guy of his size. But I think
what about the new guy Jaeger?
Ali Jaeger, yeah, he was being drafted in, and that's where I'm thinking that Furlong might not be. I'm not going to say retiring, but definitely playing time is going to be. Certainly monitored, I'd say, for the forthcoming future, because that was the reason they brought in Jaeger. Maybe they wanted to have a look at him. They said, is Beelam, would it be, and I'm just throwing this out, the fact that Furlong might need more surgery, and they think that the ideal time to do it is at the end of the Leinster campaign, and he doesn't go to South Africa. Was that the reason Jaeger was brought in?
Jaeger has gone through with Canterbury for 5 years. I mean, you're talking about the Six Nations and what we have here. I mean, if you're playing with Canterbury in New Zealand, you're playing in the top level of rugby, right?
But it's also telling me that we don't have, what's wrong with the title props we have in the country? That's the fear I have always, lads.
But you're talking about talent, whether you're talking about Gaelic football, which we're talking about earlier on, and having players X, Y, and Z, you know, when you're stepping on to, whether it's county football from club or international from provincial, it's a massive step up, right?
Huge.
So, Porter is another one who's, you know, served Ireland well and been around for a little while as well.
Yeah, I think so. Cian Healy is another one that probably has seen the last of his involvement because his recovery rate from injury is superb. The under-20s, probably unlucky not to win the championship, but I thought they were good.
Yeah, I didn't see
much. I've seen a fair bit of them. I thought they were good, but again, you fear. Is the under-20 title prop going to become the guy that's going to have to go behind Ollie Jaeger? You know, you got to have faith in your own. Hugh Gavin from Galway, who's had some injuries, Barry Gavin's son, been excellent and plays with Galwegians, a couple of Crinties lads there, Keane the Butler, was in that squad, you'd see the likes of him coming forward now into full contracts. You'll be just hoping.
But Gavin is the centre, so
he's an excellent centre. I think the Butler's a very good forward as well. Mm. I'm talking about future Ireland internationals, not just at underage, and a couple more, but we'd just be hoping that.
Would Butler be a Carrick Roman?
He came from that club, yes.
Yes.
So he's a fine player. I think he's a very good front row forward. Mm. There's others, lads. Around the front line forwards, there's other lads there, but you'd be hoping that they'll get a fair crack at the whip, that they won't be thrilled in a couple of years' time. There's a fella coming from New Zealand and he's better than you.
And George, is the junior final?
The junior final is on Sunday. The plate final first is Tuam and Sligo. It's the old Dr. Clare Cup for those of us old enough to remember it. My God. And a novel pairing in the junior cup final. Dunmore, who are 50 years old this year, never been in the final before, against Connemara, who took an awful long time to win their first junior cup. When they did eventually win it, they won a couple of them, but it'll be an intriguing battle.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to seeing it, I'll be quite honest. It'll be an intriguing battle. It'll be on that 4G pitch. And
I happened to be out just at the Connemara game the last day in their semi-final win over Castlebar, which they won, were 19-0 up and came back to 19-4.
It's something about them, Mike.
But you know what? They had a massive game the league final against Craigs the previous weekend, which ended up 35-34 to Craigs, they got a late winner, right? But the Connemara guys were suffering. They were missing a good few guys the last day, right? And there were sore bodies. Now, they started off the game, probably thought they had put it to bed.
Yeah.
They were streets better than Castlebar. Came back to 19-14, but then they went on and they got a couple of more tries, even though Castlebar got a late one as well. They won it, 31-17
or something. 16 or 17. It's just a trait I'm just watching with that kind of team at the moment. They've shot into leads and matches and then let other teams back into it. They're going to be very heavy favourites against Dunmore. They should have no fear whatsoever. They should have no fear coming into this final, but it'll be certainly an intrigue. I'd fancy Connemara to win it most definitely, but I don't know what the Connemara are.
It's a great day. It's a great day for Dunmore.
It's the highlight of the junior rugby calendar. Mm. What it's doing in the middle of March, I don't know.
Yes,
it was always traditionally they played at the second last Sunday in April with the senior cup final the day after. But of course, the way the club game has gone now, that's what we have to watch. Just before we go to our next ad break, let's golf. I don't know whether you're watching it the weekend, but Scotty Scheffler, I couldn't believe it that nobody has ever won this tournament
back to back.
Even the great Tiger Woods, you know, all those great players. McIlroy again.
Yeah, he's in the middle of changing his swing, apparently. That's what he's saying. He's updating his swing.
Why would you be doing that in the middle of the season?
I don't know. But he started well. And I think he thought it clicked.
Yeah.
He had a great first round.
Yeah.
And it went down.
Is this change in their swing, lads, though? As a member of the Poor Golfers Association myself, you'd wonder this changing of their swing. What?
Well, it's all technical stuff. It's only the slightest little thing, George. You know, it's not that you're reinventing the wheel or anything like that. It's just, I play a little bit, but I mean, I need to start playing as a kid hook or something.
One thinks of the great golfers, the magical golfers, the Jack Nicklauses, the Tom Watsons, the Severiano Ballesteroses. Those were guys that could adapt to anything. Ballesteros was as wild as they ever came, but he had a game that suited certain, you know, he won a Masters. He was an unbelievable golfer, but you've heard this a lot lately about these players, they're changing their swing or something. You'd often wonder what's possessing them to do this.
Think about the amount of data that every sport
are they getting too, and you're a man out that's been expert on this, Darren, data. Are they getting too overrun with data?
Well, I think people rely on data to tell the story, and that's not always the case. Data is data, and it's about somebody looking at it and interpreting data. But if you think about the chase for perfection, and if I use Formula One as an example, everything has to be perfect. So they rely on millions of data points on that car going around. And with golf now, you've got cameras and sensors everywhere. And they're getting more data fed to them now than I'd say they ever would. So you're talking about the Ballesteros and everything. They wouldn't have had that. No. I mean, they would have had coaches, and I'm sure they would have had great technology for the time. But right now, they're getting data, and I guarantee you they're going into centres with sensors everywhere, and they're getting coached. down to the millimetre to get every last drop they can get out of that drive. And I can guarantee you that's what's driving at the moment. Like, I would doubt somebody has come up to McIlroy and says, you're not hitting that ball right. Somebody has spotted something in an algorithm or in a list of data points somewhere that said, I think that could be a bit better. And if you...
But for a game where weather controls a lot of what's happening, you can always hear with the four-round competitions that such a guy was out at the right time today. He was out in the morning where conditions were calmer. Other guys not so fortunate in the afternoon. You know, you'd be thinking, where does the data allow for that as well? That guys were out in better conditions.
And not necessarily. I mean, it's not down to that. I mean, the majority of the time they're playing in good weather. You know, I mean, obviously, you have wind at times, right? And I mean, obviously you take that. But one of the things, Dara, there as well is compared to the players of old, is the fitness level of these guys now, right? All these guys are, like all the lads who play, whatever sport you play, they're all in the gym. Like in times past, like I said, Colin Montgomery or whatever like that, you know, a big, heavy guy.
John Daly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like they probably never saw the inside of a gym in their lives. But all these guys that play currently, that's where they get their strength. I mean, they're driving the ball further, they're driving it longer. But another player, just never mind, well, whatever about McIlroy, but Lowry has been pretty consistent in recent times. And he's moved up to 25th in the FedEx ratings, right? Which should certainly guarantee him a place. Obviously, the top 70 players get their cards, all right? So that should certainly guarantee that for him because he's not going to slip down that much. Power has been... He had one bad round on Saturday. He had a 78 on Saturday, which was rotten, right? But the other three rounds are fairly consistent. He has dropped a little bit. He's dropped, I think, to 85th or something like that. But, you know, they're performing at a consistent level and... You know, to be up there. But Lowry helped him out.
I think Lowry is not far off a click. And one feels if he could win one tournament, he might win two or three. We got to go to an ad break. We'll come back to these. We'll talk all of you later.
Over the line, in association with Supermax, home of the fresh 100% Irish chicken breast sandwich. Always fresh, never frozen. Visit supermax.ie. You're listening to Over the Line on Galway Bay FM, the sporting sound of Galway.
And you're very welcome back to Over the Line with myself, George McDonough, joined tonight by Padraig Cunningham, by Dara Canning and by Mike Rafferty as we look back on the action that involved Galway teams and other teams that we all have an affiliation for throughout the length, breadth of Europe, I suppose, and the world at the weekend. It was a great weekend in sport, there's no doubt about that. We'll get to that later. But Galway United, unfortunately, went down 1-0 on Friday night to Shamrock Rovers, who probably produced the one piece of quality in the match, Mike, that secured the victory.
Yeah, absolutely. They didn't threaten to score much more than we did, maybe just on a couple of occasions. Obviously, it's sort of obvious that our failing at the moment is just an inability to create and B, to finish. And Shamrock Rovers got their goal, ball a little dinked over the top of midfield, the right winger got onto it, whipped it across the goal, and Johnny Kenny, who was just on as a sub a few minutes earlier, I think probably with his first touch, finished from close range. I mean, it was the quality of the delivery and the tap-in goal that made all the difference. United, look, obviously we've seen... The biggest disadvantage is now that of their six games that they've played so far, four of them have been at home, right? So we've picked up 4 points from those four games, but you'd like to be looking for a bit more. I think they deserve something from the game the last night. Shamrock Rovers are technically the better team, all right? I mean, you know, they have just players that have played at a higher level, technically are superior to what we have on offer. And obviously, Dublin-based players, money counts as well. But, you know, Galway United just are not far off it, but it's just defensively, to credit them, you know, they're solid. Okay, we're giving away the odd goal here and there, but they have been very, very solid. So I just, Porrick, you're a striker, or still scoring the odd goal, I know, from Moyne Villa, and have done for Galway United in the past, so I don't know whether you have any answers.
Yeah, like that's probably, you've touched on it there, Mike. It's just the creativity problem. Like it's probably something that was there even when I was there, and it's something that's still there at the moment for them. It's just that person to probably, like Graham Burke there for Shamrock Rovers, you know, he takes the ball when there's probably two or three bodies around you, and he little shimmy and the ball is gone. It's just someone like that they're kind of missing in the squad at the moment. And Yeah, it's frustrating. I've been to two of the games all right this year, and just even I thought it as well the first day against the Pats, it was so existent that was a problem in it, and it just looked like it hasn't came yet. It hasn't clicked. I know someone like Ronan Manning, he kind of has that little bit of skill, but unfortunately he has that long term injury to his hamstring. But it's something that's lacked, and it's something that's still lacking now again today. Like
it is, because we'll lament the fact that Stephen Walsh's header grazed the post or whatever, but that was the one possible clear cut chance that we got. And when you go up that level, to that level from First Division to Premier League in this country, them are the chances, lads, that are going to become fewer, but your conversion rate has to be a lot higher.
Well, absolutely. I mean, in fairness, in the four games they played at home, Pats, Waterford, Drogheda and Shamrock Rovers, you know, they played consistently well in those games, right? They were generally, okay, maybe four times against the Shamrock Rovers enjoyed some more of the play. But in the other three games, Galway United would have been the dominant side or the majority of the pressing, right? And, like, okay, Ed McCarthy is a fine winger. We get a certain amount of ball into the box. But I think, you know, floating in these crosses to where you have 3 or 4 6-foot, 3, 4, 5 defenders, it's just a waste of time, right? It's ironic that the goal the last day just came from a ball that was whipped across the face of goal, and we've got there to finish it.
We've seen it at every level that if somebody gets there, if you whip a ball across and low, that somebody gets on the end of it. But that's seemingly what the squad are. Whereas I take it that we're lacking that bit of quality to get there, we're also lacking that, and they're very few and far between, the tapping merchant, as I call him, the guy that he'll do nothing for 84 minutes. Yeah, Mr. Cunningham, I'm across the road. Do nothing, won't be involved for 84 minutes of the game, lads. But the 6 minutes he's involved, he might get 3 chances, he'll convert 2.
Yeah, definitely. Look at the prime example to me is the Galway man that's doing it up in Derry, is Pat Owen. Like he's like, I think it was a game I was watching there recently. He was on the TV and he I don't think I even seen him on the screen much. And then next thing, 20 minutes into the second half, it was 2-0 Derry, and Pat Owen got both of them. I was like, how is he doing this? You know, like, so, and that's probably something that they have lacked. That Galway are probably lacking. Stephen Walsh, he's great, really honest, hard worker, centre forward. But probably someone with that little bit of experience, just to stay around the box. Probably just be there, like the ball could break, it breaks, and just taps it into the net. Yeah,
even Roran Gaffin, you know, the last day, you know, I mean, he's holding down the first place consistently for Shamrock Rovers. I mean, he's a good player. He had one chance the last day, a little twist and a turn and a rocket, but he linked play up well. But if you take young Kenny that came on as a sub, right? Now, his father used to play for, he's actually from Sligo. His father, Johnny, played for Galway United. And actually, I met him up there after the game thing. But like the son, in his first season with Sligo Rovers, he was only about 18. He got about 10 or 11, there or thereabouts, 10 league goals in the Premier League, which was a fair achievement. Obviously, he went on to Celtic, was farmed out a little bit at Celtic. Whether he'll ever make the way there remains to be seen. But obviously, because of the connection between Celtic with Dermot Desmond involved with both Shamrock Rovers and Celtic, he was always going to Shamrock Rovers. Now, I know Sligo wanted him, but obviously the connection was there. But he just showed, you know, striker, you get in the box, that's the place to be. But look, all Galway United can do, I think, you know, they're fifth in the table. They've 7 points. They've made a positive start. And I'm not trying to blow them up here now in any shape or form. As I said, I think the performances have been very good and very solid, just apart from getting the goals. And that all you can hope for is that somewhere along the way that happens.
The ladies' game was switched to Headford late enough on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Well, of course, the weather turned bad on Saturday. Now, Terryland, you know, looked well on Friday night. The first night of the season against Pats, you were up there, Pádraig. You know, it looked poor because there's one or two bad spots in it. But it has recovered well. But I think the rain on Saturday. So the game was moved to Headford. Now, Galway United women train down in Headford all the time, so they're very familiar. I think they made a good start to the season, scored 7 goals. I have to qualify that by saying that Cork are poor at this level. For a city the size of it, you know, they're very poor. But Galway have been consistent. Julianne Russell, who we're all familiar with, she got a hat-trick. Previously, she had a baby last year, so she only played one game at the end of the season. So I think she's like a new signing. Mm-hmm. And so she's playing up top. as a striker, a role that she wouldn't have sort of carried out previously. So I think she has something to offer. So I think, you know, they're in the cup that they won last year, the Avenir All-Ireland Cup. They're setting off in defence of that, the Showgrounds and Sligo this weekend. So that's a thing. But look, they've had a positive start to the season.
That's good, that's good. Speaking of positives in the season, no bigger positive than what we've seen at the weekend, that there's life left in the FA Cup yet, as Coventry bet Wolves. That is fairy tale stuff from Coventry. Wolves look to be home and hose, lads. 2-1 up, 3 minutes into added time. And the good old Cov, the club of my late Uncle Paddy, who loved Coventry City. And they somehow returned to the magic. 1987, their sole FA, last FA Cup success. It was a wonderful triumph for them. And it proves, lads, that there is life in the FA Cup, despite what we're thinking for the last number of years that it might be becoming just a secondary competition.
Yeah, it's lovely to see it. You know, these last minute goals, like, nothing more exciting, as United fans all know as well. But it's, yeah, getting, like, I know I have a bit of an affiliation with Wolves. My mum's from Wolverhampton, so I wouldn't watch it too closely for Wolves. But yeah, I do keep an eye on it. And it was nice to see another team from one of the lower divisions just to come up and beat the Premiership team, get into the semis and move things forward. Yeah, it's a fairy tale.
It's massive for them, because we're listening to clubs and administration and terrible things. Today, I think Nottingham Forest will be knocked 4 points as well. When I last looked, they were waiting for confirmation of this. But Coventry City themselves were in dire straits and down in the old Division 3, League 2, a couple of seasons ago, and they had no place to play. Their people that I would know and would be related to reneged their season tickets, because they moved to play in Six Ways, which was the home of Worcester Warriors. Yeah. And they had to play, and there was nobody going to the games, but they've regrouped, they've struck gold with Mark Robbins, the man who allegedly saved Ferguson's career back in the 80s, and they get to a cup semi-finals. It's massive for them. You know, they're challenging the playoff. They're not far out of the playoff positions in the Championship as well, so it's good for them. And
it's good for the game.
They get to the semi-final of the FA Cup.
I know a friend of mine who likes the odd small little punt sent me a little screenshot of, I don't know what stage the game was, but he put Coventry were 250-1. I assume it was deep in injury time, so he put 50 cent on it. He sent me, he collected €124 or whatever it was for the big gamble. But that's the fairy tale of sport at Brickley Cup.
It is the fairy tale of cup. Then you have Manchester City beat Newcastle. As again, it's been discussed, and I've had a view for a number of years that all this money that's allegedly coming to Newcastle isn't really there. And City just advance again, and Newcastle are becoming pretty disappointed.
Yeah, they have, and like, they have been hit with a lot of injuries, I suppose, throughout the season. But players, like, and therefore players are picking up, like Anthony Gordon is gone there for them. He's another massive loss for Newcastle. But it just seems to be Manchester City, just when they turn a new year into the new, for the remaining games of the season, they just seem to just turn, like, completely when the new year turns. And they're phenomenal to watch. It's such a joy. Like, they're, like, teams sit in, camp in against them, and they still can break you down, still control the ball and just control games on their own terms.
Your current Doyle neighbour, unfortunately, isn't getting much of a run at Newcastle these days.
No, he's not. He's back down training now again. Well, he still trains with the first team at times, and then he does. He's back down up with the 21s now playing as well. So
that'll be his level. He's still only a young.
He's still only young. Yeah, he's done very well. He's got in, got his Premier League appearance this year,
and has he got a new contract.
I think he's negotiating it. Anyways, something's coming.
That's good news.
But that left full for Burn.
Dan Byrne.
You know, the big lad. I mean, he keeps getting roasted at left full. So I'm a little surprised that they haven't gone for a little bit more culture.
Well, let's hope that it does happen from this season. We then have Chelsea, who are a bit of a topsy-turvy season, lads, and Leicester, who are in a bit of financial mire as well. But Chelsea advanced to play Manchester City in the semi-final. 4-2. I thought was comfortable enough.
Two goals in the last, was it 96 and 97 minutes?
They're just getting over the line. I don't think Chelsea are firing in all cylinders.
I don't think so.
No, they're a better. They're still a better side. But then brings us to
George. I love this one.
Yesterday's cup final win. Again, the magic of the FA Cup, the magic of when Manchester United play Liverpool, and the first thing that's on everybody's mind, that Amad Diallo is now the new version, the 2024 version of what Mark Robbins was back in the late 80s. Most fairy tale stuff. And I have to say, not because of the result, it was a cracking match.
Oh, it was unreal. I think it was one of the best games I've seen in a long time. And it was brilliant from Man United squad as well, in terms of the battling performance they put in. We have, to be fair, United fans this year, we haven't been blessed with performances by the team. But yesterday was definitely, in my opinion, their best performance of the year.
He took a bit of a gamble. We all knew that, everybody knew that Wan-Bissaka was going to play on Saturday. But Ten Hag then pulls a rabbit out of the hat and throws him in at left foot, basically to man mark Mo Salah. Now, I know Salah ghosted and got the second goal, but I thought he'd done well.
I thought Wan-Bissaka was very good. I thought he kept Salah out. It's not an easy task to get, especially when he's been out missing competitive football. I think it was nearly 3 months he's been out injured. Like, so it was a big ask, and he stepped in and he duly succeeded, I think, really, to be honest.
But and again, I think the one man that comes out here shining massively, two guys, Kobbie Mainoo again, superb in midfield. But this Alejandro Garnacho, fella's going down with cramp left, right, and centre, and he was still able. He gave it everything for the 120 minutes that he was on the field to play. I think he could be I know he's already a very good player, but I think going forward, he could be a man that a lot of this United squad will probably look up to, I would think. From a Liverpool perspective, and I didn't know you are a Liverpool supporter, Dara.
From a distance.
Yeah. Would you think that Mr. Old Clippity Klopp is probably, whilst hating to lose to United, now knows it's one less burden because he wants to deliver that league before he parts the ways at the end of the season?
Oh, I think so, yeah. I mean, the talk is the quadruple's gone, but I mean, I don't think there was a quadruple ever on. It's the league they're after, for sure. And let's hope they can power forward now and win it.
I know you're nearly done, George, but what about Willie Mullins last week?
What Willie Mullins done last week, lads, a great statement made yesterday that even if Willie Mullins didn't have all those winners at Cheltenham, the Irish would still have won the Presbury Cup or something. Willie Mullins is a phenomenal trainer, and it's not his fault that the best people in the business want their horses trained by the best operation in the business. You've just got to look at the staff he has. His son Patrick, David Casey, one of the best men behind the scenes you will ever meet. Ruby Walsh, the way he can analyse racing and tell you what's happening and so on and so forth is phenomenal. It was a wonderful festival, Mike. Unfortunately, the one thing that George got stuck into was Mystical Power, the one Willie Mullins horse that hit the front finished after second. The last and unfortunately finished second. But it was a wonderful festival for him. It was a wonderful festival for Irish racing. And the English are having a lot of gripes about it, but I think Mullins was absolutely phenomenal, and I think we should tip our hat to him. He's just a wonderful man. He's a brilliant trainer, and he leaves nothing to chance. We can leave nothing to chance because we're out of here. Dara, Parik, and Mike, thank you very much for joining us this evening. We'll talk to you this time next week.